What's up, everybody? This is Champion City, the podcast. We've taken a hiatus, and we are back in the studio like Voltron. Novena Carmel, how are you?
Excellent.
We'll talk about your travels. Eddie Cota, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great. The mega producer, the man who makes it happen. We're all back, and it's good to see you guys. We've taken a break, and I missed you guys.
Oh, we missed you too.
Yeah, man. It feels like a long time.
So yeah. I know Novena traveled, but real quick, I did a road trip up to Portland and San Francisco. Really?
You're like, but me first.
Oh, because yours is more epic.
Oh, you were in Oregon, were you?
God, I knew that was going to come up. Okay. But I will say that I
were there any signs of impending doom?
Actually, yes. I did see a sign next to a sheriff station off the highway that said, we need to stop Obama. Interestingly enough. Hmm. But anyways,
it's a little late to stop him.
Way too late. My point is that I was listening to this podcast. I was listening to our previous episodes. I mentioned this before, but when Novena would say the same jokes, I would laugh again.
Oh. Yeah.
And I would sound exactly the way as I laughed when I was in the studio recording the podcast.
It's good to know that I stay funny and your laughs are consistent.
But Novena, you did some major traveling.
I did.
Where'd you
go?
I went
to Miami.
But you needed a passport.
I don't know why that's so funny.
I'm dying. It's all good.
I really did go to Miami on my way to Cuba.
Hey, yo. Oh. How was it?
That's a terrible question.
That's what everyone asks.
It's not
it's like,
I mean, what am I going to do? Skirt around the question?
How was it? I don't
know.
How
did it make you feel? How did it inspire? Well, I mean, when people say, how are you? I don't know how to answer that.
Oh, I don't like that question either.
Me neither. But, you know, it's life. You're going to get that question.
Well, this is my podcast, so I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. I'm really tired. And what is that?
It's called a laptop. It was invented in 1994 by Mr. Stephen J. Laptop.
Yeah. I've never been, but I thought it was interesting how you said there's no advertising, no billboards.
And yeah, that wasn't something that I noticed immediately. If there is any billboards or anything, it's country pride type posters.
Nationalism?
So like a big painting of Fidel, and it will say something like peace, prosperity, and future growth or something like that.
Yeah.
The internet was really interesting there.
Was it fast or was it
Well, just the whole idea of it was different, where people don't have it at their fingertips like we do here. It's sort of been, I guess in the last 6 months or so, introduced to have availability in public spaces for the average person. So you can buy a card that gives you a login code, and there's only certain places that have Wi-Fi, so like public parks. Mm. So I would go to these beautiful sort of colonial public parks with old statues and stuff, and then there's dozens of people just there on there, literally bringing their laptops and their phones and FaceTiming and just trying to get like all the internet they can.
Wow.
Just random things would be really weird. Like there's really no toilet paper anywhere. So if you go to if you can find a public bathroom, most likely it doesn't have a toilet seat and maybe not a door. And you can't, if you have toilet paper, you can't flush it down the toilet. I mean, it's like, these are, I feel bad saying these sorts of things
because like
there was
LAUSD.
So much amazing stuff, which I feel like we'll get to.
Ayo.
But yeah. But, I went through an incredible cultural exchange program where we studied Afro-Cuban dance and drumming, and then also got to witness a variety of amazing performances. And it really showed me how vast Cuban music is. There's a lot of African influence from, you know, when slaves were brought over. There's also, I don't know, all kinds of sounds that come out of that place. Like I could go on and on and on.
No, it's so intriguing. And it's cool because I feel like we might get more insight from our guests today. But before we get to him, Eddie Cota, how was your holidays?
It was cool, man. I just stayed, you know, chilled. New Year's was
wow, quite the contrast. It was cool, just kind of chill.
I can't go after that when
I know
when my New Year's was spent at a house party. How I can't.
Now you see why I did mine first, because I knew it wasn't gonna
set me up.
I did. All right. Anyways, time for the theme song. Check me on that beat, honey, on it, fit it. Check me on this beat.
Oh. 1, 2, 3, go.
This is Champion City, our bi-weekly podcast where we talk about things that are happening in our city that affect the world. And we've got a very special guest today, and he's affecting the world on Facebook and in classrooms. In classrooms. He's affecting the minds of the children who will go on to create cures for cancer, affect social media, affect things that are happening politically. He's an educator, former host on,
Is that allowed?
Once a host, always a host. It was like a Marine Corps.
And I
was
like president.
Yo, he had one
president
of the most.
President Michael Barnes.
He had one of the most incredible radio shows that I loved that you can catch, that you back in time. If you have a DeLorean, you can go back in time and catch it. It's called Melting Pot, but I believe it's a blog now. Novena,
is that really
she?
The intro for Michael Barnes?
No.
It can't be the intro.
Maybe we should
We're
fucked. What? That's what you're going to say.
I say we keep this all in, man. Let's just start off. Here we go. So our guest today is an educator at Cal State University Long Beach, teaches sociology. He held down the turntables at several of my favorite radio stations in L.A. He's definitely an institution in its own right with his incredible thoughts, his philosophies as posted on Facebook. And we're going to talk about many different things, everything from Cuba. We're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about politics and get his perspective on many different things. His name is Michael Barnes. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on Cuba and your experiences, Michael?
A lot of my experiences were pretty similar to what Novena was talking about. I think that there were things that I was kind of expecting, and then a whole bunch of things that I really couldn't have anticipated. One of the images that is really like seared into my mind, and I don't know when you got in or if this was the case at the airport, but just leaving the airport. The airport at Cuba is really small.
Which airport did you go into?
I think Jose Marti.
And is that the one in Havana?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it's mostly just, you know, like soldiers and people who work there and, you know, just like a few travelers. But the moment you step outside, there was just like a throng of people who were waiting for people coming back. And it was, you know, just like a scene. I'd never seen something like that before. Just a reminder of the difficulties that, you know, economic policy, political policies has kind of made for the island in a very like human kind of way.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, this podcast, we talk about how L.A. might have influenced things globally. And I'm pretty sure it's a little premature to ask this, considering that, you know, everything's just happening. But did you see any kind of outside influences in Cuba, or is it pretty much isolated the way it's been for the past 50
well,
years?
Well, the outside influences right now are, you know, from other Latin American countries and from the European Union. There's a lot that's happened in the country, it seems, over the last decade that real differences in terms of fixing infrastructure, rebuilding a lot of things, kind of creating more of giving Cuba kind of like a global kind of character as tourism from everywhere else in the world, because everybody else can go to Cuba with no problems. It's just the U.S. because of the embargo. And even as a U.S. citizen, you can travel to Cuba. The main problem is spending money. And now the travel restrictions have kind of been widened a bit so that many more people, I was able to go, you know, just because of the educational work that I do. And so easy for me as an educator to get down there. I went there in August and in some ways I'm still processing a lot of the trip just because there are so many different things to think about.
You know, it'll be interesting in terms of influences, though. There's a festival coming up, and it'll be great to see the exchanging of ideas and what may come out of that. You know what I'm saying?
And, you know, the thing with L.A., there's now a direct flight from L.A. to Havana, which really just started up in the last month. And there's likely to be fewer travel restrictions and more flights here in 2016. And so travel is certainly going to be, you know, there's going to be even more Americans going and more people from Los Angeles as well. And so it'll be interesting to see both how the greater numbers of Americans going to Cuba has an effect on the island, but especially also how the island in some ways has an effect on the Americans coming back.
You mentioned, Michael, that you thought because of, you know, the infrastructure that they have, that it wouldn't necessarily have that much of an impact with embargo being lifted from the States. One of the things that was obvious there was how important tourism is in as far as bringing money into the country. One thing that people don't know, which is sort of ridiculous, and most Cubans, they make like around $20 a month, and that doesn't matter if you're a doctor or if you drive a taxi. It's like everybody makes about the same amount. And granted, things are a little bit cheaper there, but it's like it still doesn't. It doesn't equal out. It's not like things are so much cheaper that $20 a month can stretch. Yeah. So everybody has to have at least one side hustle, if not multiple ones. And one of the best side hustles is to be involved in the tourism industry in some sort of way, because then you're directly getting money from tourists, which is worth more. They have two different currencies. Mm-hmm. There's the local currency that local people use, which is worth like 25 times less than a dollar, basically. And then they have one that's used by tourists, and that is sort of like 1-to-1 ratio, like one what they call kook to a dollar. And so you can imagine if someone is tipping, you know, like their taxi driver or whatever, you could interact with four tourists and make what you do in a month by getting tips from four different people. So it's a huge, huge deal. So considering that, it's like, and considering how many people there are in America, yeah. I wonder, you know, just even certain companies going in there. Like, we went on this tour, and there was a guy there that was had a lot of Cuban pride, and he was pointing at buildings and being and lamenting and being like, pretty soon that'll be an Apple store, you know? Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is, too, it's like from our perspective, that's sort of sad, right? Because it's like, oh, they'll tear down some beautiful old building. But also from a Cuban perspective, it's like they want to have an Apple store. And this building that we think is beautiful, like I was there taking photos of buildings and cars. And a Cuban person was like, why are you taking a photo of that? Like, what's the big deal? And I'm like, this building is amazing. It's like, has, you know, the walls are falling apart and there's this old car that doesn't run, but I love the colors. And and then, you know, and someone pointed out to me, like, that's romantic to you because it's not what you have. But like, yeah. Someone who lives in a building that's falling apart would rather live in like a modern apartment from 2015. Or, you know, not everybody, yeah. but yeah, a lot of people would. So it's sort of like there may be people who want to keep it beautiful, but there's also people who want new things too.
Can I make a connection there? Isn't it funny too, like when you go to certain bars or certain like LA spots, and we tend to manufacture that brokenness, that greediness. Like, we recreate that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like people pay a lot of money to give it that vibe, when in reality, that's someone's reality, and that's not something they're proud of. But I'm sure we can talk about Cuba, like, for hours
so
and hours.
Much.
But
for
I do love the idea that we are talking about how things are impacting, and maybe it's not so much on a cultural level, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Cultural thing is definitely going to change
of course.
In the next couple of weeks, especially with the Manana Festival in May, and that kind of opportunity of more and more people being able to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And as the internet gets more and more opened up, you're going to have more Cuban artists being able to stay on the island but communicate to other artists around the world as well.
You're going to be flooding my SoundCloud.
Oh, yes. But that's such kind
of
a good
Cuban
thing.
Trap, of course.
Because there's so much quality.
Cuban trap music.
So much quality in Cuba.
One thing that really stood out to me that I thought was so cool was it's sort of like everybody knows how to dance there really well. And I don't mean dance like shake your booty and like twerk, but like salsa dance. Like if you're 5 years old to 8 years old, you can salsa, right? And maybe more than that. And so I went out to different parties with, you know, like young hip people in their 20s and 30s. And it's the standard there that people are salsa dancing.
it's a prerequisite.
Yeah, and I felt so weird because I view myself as someone that can dance, but I can't salsa dance. Huh. And so it was so strange being that person that was like, people would ask me to dance, and I'm like, no, I can't dance. Like, I've never been that person.
It's funny
really.
Because whenever I see you on the spot, you can dance.
Yeah.
So to be
like,
put on the spot.
Yeah, it's like, no. And then it's like, I can't speak Spanish. And they're like, why? What's wrong with you, Cuban person that can't speak? And I'm like, no, I'm not Cuban. They're like, what? Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
why not?
But then also, like, I saw different, you know, performances of, say, different sort of, like, Afro-Cuban music, you know, maybe, like a Latin band with conga drums and stuff like that. And I was thinking about how, because one of the first nights I was there, we went out to this show, and it was this dope Cuban band, kind of like, to, you know, the average person, if they don't know Cuban music, they might think like Buena Vista Social Club, right? Mm-hmm. And it was that style of music, but it was, everybody in the band was in their 20s, including the lead singer. And they all looked so fly, like they had on gold chains and like quote unquote hip hop or urban attire or whatever, you know, like, yeah. But it wasn't like, oh, this is a novelty. How funny that these young people are playing this music. It was like, no, this is what we do. And everybody that came out to see the band were young, and they were like dancing salsa and rumba. And I just loved how it was sort of a tradition that was being upheld by young people, and it was a normal thing. And it made me think how in the U.S., I wish that there was more sort of couples dancing, or, you know, like, yeah, that people actually did together, and that people across generations appreciated. And I was really also thinking about how it would be so cool to bring a lot of these young people to like communities in the U.S. And because to me, I was like, oh, these look like cool guys, and it would be dope to bring them to, like, I don't know, like an inner city school or something.
Afro-funky.
And they're, no, like an inner city school, and they're okay. Dancing salsa and amazing musicians and speaking even Spanish to, like, maybe, I don't know, a black kid in the hood who thinks that there's only one black experience, mm-hmm. and seeing, like, how talented, you know, someone that looks like them is.
Even with all the struggles that have happened in Cuba and the negative aspects of the Castro regime, you know, one of the things that is definitely better is that kind of public investment in the arts. You know, part of the reason why I took home so much vinyl when I went there is because those artists were subsidized by the government and able to record and able to produce whatever it was that they wanted to do. And that same kind of investment comes through in their education system in a way that it just simply doesn't in ours. And that kind of investment in creating art and kind of validating and valorizing art is something
and
that'd
validizing.
Be great.
Validizing
art.
Validizing.
You mentioned
Anthony Valdez.
Hey, follow me on Twitter at Anthony Valdez. You mentioned education, and that's one of the reasons why I love you, is that you are an educator. Talk about what you teach and where you teach.
I teach classes in sociology at CSU Long Beach, mm-hmm. and I teach introductory sociology as well as classical and contemporary theory, and also sociology of popular culture. And
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, all of them
that,
are.
He said that so fast.
He did.
Like, how do you even remember that?
Like, if I didn't know you and I heard that, I would fall in love. Like, okay, winner, right? I don't even know what that is, but winner.
He's a catch.
Can't wait to introduce him to my mom. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, we need to talk more after, apparently. So for me, it's nice because I get a mix of students. Like, with the intro class, it's like people who are just out of high school or returning to college. The theory classes are generally, you know, like juniors and seniors, and the pop culture class gets a whole bunch of people, not just sociology, but kind of broader people as well. And so it's nice. And Long Beach is a legit diverse school, so you get a lot of different types of people from different backgrounds, and having that mix of people. And, you know, I'm really big on discussion and kind of getting people to kind of think about a variety of different perspectives as well. And yeah, you know, that's what I do. It's what I love doing.
And what I love as well is, in addition to all this, you held down a radio show for many years on different stations.
Yeah.
And you're also, you know, you DJ here and there. Like, I love that duality of educator / mm-hmm. record collector / music nerd, music snob. Like, I love that. Do those things ever clash, or do they go hand in hand?
No, I mean, they clash quite a lot. Mostly the academic stuff clashing with the music stuff. Because, I mean, like, when I was in graduate school and working on my dissertation, I had to quit the radio just because there was just too much work and I couldn't devote enough stuff to it. And that may even be part of the reason why I'm kind of stepping away from radio now, just because I have different ideas for research. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. It's not entirely all of it, but maybe it's part of it. Mm-hmm. And so there's some aspects where one kind of draws away from the other. There are a lot of aspects where they complement each other, particularly in the pop culture class, just because do a lot of, critical analysis of pop culture stuff, and particularly connected to music videos. And so, yeah, it's nice, you know, a way trying to bridge, you know, the various things that I enjoy and kind of bringing them together. Been really, really blessed to be able to do that kind of work.
Do you find that with these young, I'm assuming, maybe I'm generalizing, but these young kids, it's a very popular subject in terms of what's happening with pop culture and correlating that into the classroom?
Yeah.
Or connecting that with the classroom?
Yeah, it helps. The students coming up at this point, and really this has been a trend, I'm thinking way back when I was teaching in graduate school, even back then. So I've been teaching classes for like 15 years now. Students are really, really visual learners more often than any other learning style. And so the things that they really recall and remember and make an impact on them are either the longer documentaries I show, or when we kind of break up little things from pop culture, maybe a video or something connected to a reality TV show or something connected to a movie or a TV show, you know, all these different things, and kind of digging into them and finding, you know, sociological aspects of it, try and bridge the kind of gaps that often are between the work that they do in college, which seems to be something so separate from the way that they live their lives. And I try in my classes to kind of bring those things together so that they see the connections. And it is definitely, you know, that aspect of it and that style and kind of being able to get them to think about things that they kind of take for granted and just think are just kind of normal is one of the more satisfying aspects.
You know, what's crazy is that I see a parallel too with your radio show that you had, Melting Pot, where you kind of challenge the listener and you go left and right. It was definitely an adventure.
Yeah.
And I don't know, are you comfortable talking about what went down with KPFK?
Yeah. Yeah,
because I mean, it's not like it's a secret, because I was looking at the LA Weekly a couple weeks ago and it's out there. But I don't know. Is that true or is it a myth?
No. Everything they say is true.
The way
it might even be worse than you know, what's publicly known. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. Pacifica, which is a network that runs a number of stations, including KPFK here in Los Angeles and KPFA in Berkeley and a station in New York and Washington and Houston, has always, you know, it's kind of like these cyclical moments of crazy dysfunction, and gets really highly factionalized. And the one faction, it's like Game of Thrones, but radio.
Wow.
You know, and it's like one faction overthrows the other faction and they're running things, but they don't know what they're doing. And so somebody else comes up and takes them out. And it's like every, you know, few years this happens. And what's happening right now is maybe the worst dysfunction, especially, you know, I worked there for 5 years and, you know, I left, but, you know, 3 or 4 other DJs also left who had been there for like 20 and 25 years.
Wow.
And so even them and other people have been saying, you know, like the fundraising, we've never done fundraising for this long. You know, the audience is gone, you know, all these different issues that are going on with it. A lot of it just connects to the lack of organization and a kind of inability for people to, like the way the kind of bureaucratic structure is set up, inability of people to just kind of do the work that's necessary to kind of build it back up. And it just got to a point where for me as an individual programmer, I didn't feel like I could do the kind of show that I wanted to. And I also didn't feel like I could, because I have, you know, it connects to the question you were asking earlier, because of all the things that I have to do with my job at CSU Long Beach, I didn't feel like I could put everything that I kind of needed to into KPFK in order to really do what I could to try and make the situation better. And in that kind of situation, you know, it just reminded me of my fairly recent divorce. Is just like, you know, at some point you kind of have to realize when you're beat and you need to get out, you know, for your own protection.
That's real.
And so that was the situation. and it doesn't seem like anything's improved since I left. It is really a precarious situation, and hopefully things will work out, but it also may ultimately end up in Pacifica selling one of the stations or loaning, leasing, you know, doing like some financial stuff is really going to have to happen. Somebody's going to have to take it over, be some kind of court-appointed bankruptcy kind of thing. I mean, it's a really, really bad situation. It's just kind of been brewing for years and years, and now it's finally coming to a head.
And it's such a bad time because not only is KPFK a very important institution in LA, I feel like the timing, I feel like we would need KPFK now more than ever, although that's probably been repeated throughout history.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we certainly said it a lot during fundraisers, but, yeah. You know, it is, it's an alternative voice and is legitimately alternative and, you know, certainly is pretty, you know, focused on the left, but, you know, is still very critical of a lot of what passes for the left here in the United States, in addition to being very critical of what's going on the right. And the amount of perspectives that when it's going good and when people who are on it are doing really good work, and there are a lot of people still that are who I respect who are sticking it out, it really is a resource that, you know, should... Man, you know, just things should be, they really should be working out better. And it's not even that it's that difficult. You need some good radio people to kind of just right the ship and kind of keep the water steady. But the way the power structure of it is with this kind of ongoing political factions and people who think they know what's best for it and all that just keeps getting in the way.
So you mentioned people who think they know who's... one or two people that's fucking it up the most. Let's drop names right now.
I like this, Novena. Stay like this forever.
let's get some ratings here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Just kidding, you don't really have to
answer. If you want ratings, probably KPFK is not the thing to talk
this
about.
Podcast is probably killing.
Though, you know, as things get tawdrier at the station, and you know, like people are getting fired because they're, you know, like stealing funds, and you know, this person is, you know, occupying an office and shredding documents, and like, I mean, it really is
like
all
that.
Kinds of crazy.
Dang,
yeah.
It's like House of Cards.
I tell you, it's like that's what you know, House of Cards,
of KPFK,
House of Cards, Game of Thrones with radio.
Oh shit!
By the way, a quick plug: new season of House of Cards coming up this year on HBO. I'm sorry, go ahead. They sponsor the podcast.
that's what we're working on.
Yo, but it's really like that. I mean,
yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I'd watch that. Let's do a documentary.
Not cool at the same time.
No, it's just cool.
But yeah.
Like, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Any interest in taking your radio show to an online presentation?
Yeah, well, I think that in some ways it's probably what I'm going to focus on. I'm still trying to figure things out. Like, you know, I've been doing this blog for a while, Melting Pot, as a blog. It's just meltingpotblog.com. And, you know, just like in the last week, kind of got into sort of recording from home with just like best of 2015 kind of shows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing about KPFK, you know, like there like really wasn't much of a music department there. You know, like they don't have a library. And so like if you're looking for music, like you have to hustle for everything. And so, you know, there's skills that I might not have had if I had stayed at KCRW that has, you know, an incredible library, or at KLX in Berkeley that also had an amazing library, you know, that now I have all kinds of connections that I didn't have necessarily, didn't need to have. And so it's like all the music that I got when I was at KPFK, I can still get. And so, like, I can almost do everything there just without kind of the physical structure.
Yeah.
And so right now I'm just kind of enjoying a little bit of distance from it.
Nice.
You know, after like 22 years in radio. Wow.
It's the climate at KPFK kind of sounds like what's happening in the GOP 2016 election field. I mean, it kind of does, where you have a group of people who think they know what's right. And then you got this guy with no facts who thinks he knows what's right.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, well, I guess we're going to find out. You know, what's
maybe if some sort of militia takes over KPFK, that'll bring the media ISIS. That's needed.
Yeah.
Is that what they're calling them?
No, that's what I call them.
That's pretty funny. Good one.
Thank you. I didn't get that. That's hashtag. It's on the internet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So 2016, what do you think? Novena. I'm not even going to ask you that right now.
2016. Someone said to me recently that if you add up the numbers 2016, it makes a 9. And in numerology, that is a number of completion.
It is.
Yeah. So maybe a lot of, you know, things that have sort of been pending will be completed this year. I'm starting a new podcast of numerology sponsored by Champion City.
And House of Cards season 2.
Season 9.
No, but it's, again, Novena, I don't know what you're talking about, but for some weird reason, like, you're bringing...
Well, no one else is saying anything. No. Fuck.
In your defense, you're actually bringing up these great points. You talk about completion. What I'm learning is how things... I mean, seriously, Novena, you're on fire. You don't even realize it.
Thanks.
Someone get a fire extinguisher. Yeah. She's hot. You know, what I'm learning through this election is that if you didn't have Bush, you wouldn't have Obama. And if you didn't have Obama, you wouldn't have Trump. I'm starting to see how these things all affect one another.
And if you didn't have Anthony, you wouldn't have Novena.
And if you didn't have Novena, you wouldn't have our producer, Eddie Gota.
Okay, no, but for real.
Yeah.
That's a great point, Anthony.
I got it from you.
Thank you. Of course you did.
Michael Barnes, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, it is a really good point. This election cycle, you know, things have been kind of building towards this, I guess, since 2010, when the Tea Party movement or whatever erupted, and the GOP kind of made a very calculated move to kind of focus on that group of people and their kind of mindset and their perspective. And what they have now in the GOP field is all those chickens coming home to roost. Mm. Because all that energy is what's driving the GOP right now.
And isn't it crazy that that's kind of everything that's coming out is the kind of stuff the GOP 4 years ago, 8 years ago would want to hide?
Yeah.
And now it's in the open.
Yeah. And you can't get traction unless you say that crazy shit.
Right?
Like, there's no way. You look at the people who dropped out of this race, they're all the people who actually have executive experience. Mm. And you know, Jeb Bush is going to be, he's not long for this world either. And so, like, all of these people with experience, out. People who have no political experience and have the most outlandish, crazy things to say, top of the polls.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things that's been fascinating about this particular election cycle. And now that we're getting close to the point where people are actually going to start voting in the primaries. And so we'll actually get a sense of what, you know, what's real of this. Because the whole thing at times, it just seemed completely unreal.
Yeah. Remember when Mitt Romney said that corporations are people, and he got flack for that. And I feel like he deserved that. But I feel like if Trump said that, it would be applauded. Like, no one would try to hide that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's just like the craziness of it. Trump, as a multi-billionaire, telling people that they should vote for him because he's not going to take money from rich people. Well, yeah, because he doesn't have to, because he is the rich person who used to be paying everybody else.
That's true.
And it's just like the arguments that are made, it's just like incredible craziness.
Yeah.
But that's the world that it appears that we're, you know, we still really don't know what world we're in with the election, you know, until people really actually start voting. Like, I just have a hard time believing that Trump or Carson are actually going to start winning states and have some, like, actual legitimate momentum. And every kind of, you know, social issue that comes up, particularly connected to issues of race, policing, race, and kind of protest, feeds into those things as well, particularly with the situation in Oregon that's going on right now. And so that's one of the things that actually has been kind of nice about this cycle is just the and is again kind of the influence of social media on conversations and kind of on media discourses is that even, you know, five years ago or so, you wouldn't have gotten the same kind of pushback that that you get right now, where like all this stuff happened with this this occupation in Oregon. And people were like immediately calling the media out. Okay, why aren't you calling these guys terrorists?
Yeah,
you know, like why is what they're doing different than what Black Lives Matter
did? Which is a great question.
At the, you know, Mall of America.
Yeah,
and like you got a crazy police response when they did that.
Yeah.
They didn't even have any guns. And then you got these dudes taking over government buildings.
But Michael, I think you're missing the point. They're patriots. That's I hate hearing that. They're patriots.
You're right, Anthony. How could I forget?
Yo, but you bring up a great point too about, you know, the social media and activism, Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how impactful has that been? I think the last time we talked, I had mentioned how I didn't know how I felt about Black Lives Matter because they were one of the tactics was blocking the freeway and they were pretty much disturbing things, right? And I was like, oh, like that, I'm on your side, but you're actually annoying me. But then I realized that they're doing the right thing in a sense of they're forcing the conversation and they're forcing leaders or potential leaders to talk about these issues. And I realized it is effective.
Yeah. You know, like in kind of a similar way, a lot of people gave them flack when they were interrupting Bernie Sanders, you know, during the early part of, you know, the campaign. And they're like, well, why are you interrupting this dude? He marched with King, you know, like this is the guy who's most in your corner. But, you know, there were aspects of his message that those protests allowed Sanders to sharpen and to come out with something even better.
Yeah.
In a way that if they had just focused on, you know, being at Donald Trump's rallies or Ted Cruz or somebody like that, it's like, well, those people are never going to really respond in the way that you want them to. You know, they're just going to use you to rile up their people and kind of show how you're so different and so against their version of America. And they really have, you know, it's been an incredibly successful campaign in kind of shifting how people look at a number of issues, kind of bringing issues to the table and having people talk about them and focus on them, that, you know, for years these issues have been important to the Black community.
Yeah.
Issues of police violence, police brutality, killing of either armed or unarmed men and women, like all those issues have been major issues. You know, 2015 was the 50th anniversary of the Watts uprising. Like those issues were important back then. But the media in some ways wasn't covering them in quite the way that they are now. It's still not perfect or, you know, by any means, but there's definitely a shift where you see more of these stories in a way that you didn't a couple years ago before kind of Black Lives Matter really kind of formed into a movement.
Man, we're covering a lot of ground. I just realized somehow we seamlessly went from Trump, 2016, Cuba. Novena, how are you? Man.
I was just thinking how Michael always has a way of kind of putting a positive spin on things, which is cool. Like, I would almost expect him, Michael, I would expect you to be like, I don't know, just something like, oh, it doesn't matter how much coverage there is, it's just not gonna da da da. But then he's like, there's actually more than there was before, and it's like,
well,
things
know,
are
he's,
better.
He's a professor.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And so actually, well, yeah, since he's a professor, I believe it too, and it makes me feel good.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, and I have these conversations with other sociology professors, because as a discipline, sociology in some ways has a reputation of being really, really depressing, because almost all of what we do is focus on social problems, and especially with the kind of the way secondary education is and the difference between higher education, a lot of times when students come to us, like they haven't really heard any of this information. It's almost like getting a completely different version of how America works, and for a lot of people, it's a really, really depressing kind of thing when you realize, oh yeah, that is a problem. Oh, that's a problem too. I never saw that.
So let me ask you, Mike, because you were kind of candid about you recently going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Novena brought up a great point about how you see the light in these situations. And you even spoke about how, you know, how jaded or I guess how down your field of study can be amongst professors.
Mm-hmm.
What keeps you going? What keeps your light shining?
Antidepressants.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding.
I thought you were saying.
I do take. I mean, I had.
It just wasn't the answer I was expecting at that very second. I was waiting for heaviness, and then I got the obvious.
Yeah, but it is. I mean that you know, not to make light of that. It's something. Depression is something that I kind of lived with my entire life and didn't really know, like a way of articulating kind of what was going on. I just thought it was kind of normal, and kind of fought really getting help and seeking help for a long period of time. Just kind of like classic masculinity, especially Black masculinity, kind of stuff. Being a tough guy, that kind of thing, you're just supposed to work out your problems. And, you know, I just wanted to say that because I don't want to make light of any of the struggles that people go on and the fact that a lot of times when they go on antidepressants that they really do help quite a lot, and they certainly have helped me.
I think it's fair to say Champion City, sponsored by House of Cards, Season 9, and antidepressants. I have a question. Sorry. Okay. I just wanted to talk because I'm here too. I would like your expert professor opinion on the forecast for Los Angeles in 2016.
That's a great question.
Which forecast are you talking
about? Not El Nino.
I think
cultural forecast, political forecast. You know, people to people, hand to hand combat.
Damn, there's where to begin.
Is LA going to be okay? Tell us
LA's
something positive.
LA's going to be okay. LA's going to be okay. You know,
the rents
right
are
now
up.
At least. The thing that I think is you know, the underlying issue, because of all the focus and attention of an election year, and with the rhetoric flying around this particular election year, and then you have multiple mass shootings and terrorist attacks here in California and fairly close to home with San Bernardino. What kind of effect the kind of greater attention to certain issues, like how that kind of pushes things, I think is the thing that is most interesting to see, you know, because having that attack in San Bernardino was directly what led LA Unified to close their schools when they got a threat that they really should have seen as being a bogus threat. And so how officials respond, how the people respond within the area to kind of issues that we haven't necessarily felt in a way that people in New York have kind of constantly, you know, not just around 9/11, 2001, but kind of multiple different attacks that have kind of happened or almost happened. Like that kind of experience is somewhat new to Southern California. And so seeing how people respond to that, I think will be one of the interesting things, and seeing how the election finally shakes out, since California doesn't really vote until things kind of get worked out. And we'll see. But like I said, 2016, LA will be fun.
I agree. It's been a fun episode. Every time I get to talk to you, I learn something new.
Thanks, Anthony.
Talking to Eddie.
Damn it. Damn it.
Yo, real quick, how can people find you? So let them know about the blog.
So you can find me online. The blog Melting Pot is meltingpotblog.com. I tend to put a couple posts each week. Both new and older music, and we'll start doing the Melting Pot Radio Hour up on there. And other than that, you know, if you enroll in classes in CSU in Long Beach, you can look for me in the Department of Sociology.
Great. Tell me you heard him on Champion City.
There you go.
Also, just want to say I've been posting a lot of photos from my trip in Cuba on my Instagram. So if you're interested, please check them out. Like, I've been getting some great feedback. My Instagram is Novena Carmel. I'm sure it's like somewhere online. And if you have any ideas of what I should do with all the photos I've taken, I'd love to know. Like, I just feel like I have such beautiful photos from a place that's really, really visually unique, at least. I mean, if not in other ways as well. So I'm like, should I, you know, print them out and put it in a book? Should I just like put them on Facebook in a photo album? Like,
Kickstarter, do a coffee table book.
I mean, like, you know, seriously. I'm not trying to like, I don't know if I, whatever, like, if you have any ideas, just because I'd like to do something more than just post them on Instagram, let me know.
Do
even
that.
If it's just like, you know, whatever. I don't know. Make a calendar.
Hey, whatever.
Hey.
Thanks, y'all, for tuning in. Check us out, championcity.la. We're on SoundCloud. We're on iTunes. We're on everything. Go to the site. Go check it out. Subscribe and enjoy. And leave your feedback. We also welcome your questions and comments. And let Novena know what she should do with those pitches. All right, y'all. Peace.